We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and I'm excited about my guest. And again, we're talking some interesting stuff, top secret stuff, as we were talking off air. Author Crispin Boyer from National Geographic Kids, top secret. How are you, Crispin? Thanks for stopping by.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's kind of like jump into specifically enough. How did you get involved with National Geographic and all that stuff? And did it start there, or did you write some stuff before even getting involved with them?
Well, I was a newspaper reporter in North Carolina for a while, and then I worked in magazines, especially video game magazines, for about 12 years. And I started writing the video game content for National Geographic Kids. And I was starting to wanted to branch out a bit. And then I started writing for them feature stories about animals and wildlife. And next thing you know, I'm writing books about history, ninjas, knights, and boogers and gross stuff. And eventually I've written enough kind of history and nonfiction books for them. There'd always be some little aspect of the topic that I was researching that were like a little extra nugget of information that I would file away, like exactly. Something unknown. And then when they said, let's do a book called Top Secret, I referred back to all these things that I kind of stashed, all these hidden facts from all these other books. And so I guess what I'm saying is I've trained my whole life to write Top Secret.
You train your whole life to write Top Secret. And so is this just for kids, or do you think adults will like this as well?
I hope that adults will like it. I kind of see it as the perfect bathroom book. It's just really nuggety. It's a lot of fun spreads broken down. So, you know, you got 15 minutes to kill or whatever, and you can read about the president's car and all of its secret features, or you can read about secret programs at NASA. It's got all these topics that really ignite a kid's imagination, but at the same time, it might be a lot of stuff that adults don't know too.
And these are all truths. Like, these aren't fake things like Inspector Gadget type stuff. This is real.
This is all real. Some of it seems like it might be Inspector Gadget. Some of it seems like a movie. And sometimes I do debunk things, conspiracy theories, but no, it's all, National Geographic would, they vetted they had fact checked everything. And I interviewed a real CIA agent for some of it too, and got insight from her that informed other parts of the book. So it's all true.
That's great. It's all true. And it's all fun. And exactly. And so I'm going to kind of, I don't want to give away the book, but I want to just talk about the researches from all before. Why did you cover different types of things? And you said you wrote and different things like that. How much of this is research versus you just had it? Is it in articles you've written or different things? So it really, it's to an adult audience you wrote to, and now you're making it kids. That's different, right? In certain ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. I would say it's all 90% new information. But so say, you know, I wrote a book a long time ago about a road trip across the U.S., stopping at the Washington Monument.
Okay.
And then I realized at the time that Lincoln's head has a secret room in it. It didn't really fit in what I was working on, but I stashed that away and wrote about it now. I've written about ninjas for other books, but in this book, okay, I really get into the top secret history of ninjas. So it's kind of taking what I wrote before and then diving deeper into the secret aspects of it.
So when National Geographic thinks of something even for kids, they want it to be something that's going to end up in schools as well, right? This book is not going to be just, you know, purchased by consumption. School librarians are going to want to pick this up, right?
And I think that's actually a big part of their business, school libraries and also book fairs and things like that. Yeah, and even the books passed around the playground and that kind of thing. Because, you know, it's like my goal with this book is to have information that not everybody knows. So a young reader could get it, and then they'll know something that, say, their parents or their uncles or aunts don't know. And for a young reader, that's a pretty big deal, especially nowadays. So, you know, I mentioned like the secret room in the Washington Monument, or, you know, that the government actually worked on flying saucer shaped aircraft. These are things that, you know, when a parent might say flying saucers aren't real, and a boy or girl can be like, aha, but there was one that the government worked on at Area 51 in the 1950s. So those are the kinds of like gotcha moments. Yeah.
So when you went to Area 51, I'm just saying, you interviewed somebody from Area 51. Did you debunk something that there really are aliens living on Area 51? Remember the whole thing? I think it was last year, everyone was going to just go, and they came up with this joke, we're gonna attack Area 51, especially the whole UFO thing. Did you debunk that in the book a little bit?
Or well, not? All I can really do with that is get the official word and then get various eyewitnesses. So, you know, Area 51 kind of goes all the way back to the crash in Roswell, New Mexico, a famous crash of, the government said, a weather balloon. And some eyewitnesses on the scene said it was actually a saucer-shaped crash. There was pilots in the vehicle. I'm sorry, I have a rooster.
No, crying. I love this. See, no. That is not a rooster. That rooster is trained in martial arts, telling you that somebody's trying to look. See, there you go. Okay,
that's that much is he is trained in martial arts. I'll tell you that. So with Area 51, it's kind of a legend that grew in the telling that they whisked away the pilots of a crashed UFO. The government says it was a weather balloon or possibly a manned craft. So over the years, you know, because Area 51 is such a top secret place, the official word is that's where they test top secret aircraft. That's why it's basically this long runway in the middle of the desert. But there are a lot of strange structures you see on satellite photography, but it is really hard to get any information or to get close to it.
You call as a reporter and say, hi, I'm writing a book for National Geographic and I want to find information on Area 51. How does that happen as a journalist? Because, you know, I have to get celebrities all the time and people like yourself to get on my show. And it's a process. And it's a process for some celebrities that take forever and going through all these different things. But I've never done more of the journalist coverage to say, you know what, I want to find about this research. So when you said, okay, part of the top secret thing is going to be Area 51, what did you have to go about doing to get that information?
Well, for Area 51, it's more about Googling people that are involved in past stories, making contact with them, and then just following up and asking questions. Like for the CIA agent that I interviewed, she had given, I noticed that she had been given many interviews in the past. I figured she was media friendly. And sometimes it's about other people want to promote a book too. So you mentioned their book that whenever you interview them. So, you know, with the Area 51, it wasn't a rich vein because it is such a top secret location that it ended up being a lot of kind of previously reported stories because there's a lot of dead ends when it comes to something like that.
Exactly. But
whenever I talked to the CIA agent, she provided information that was on the record for the interview in the book. She provided information that was for background that informed other parts of the book that I couldn't say that she provided. So it was a bit of like the reader facing information, and then the other was just like when I had information in there about the lifestyle of a spy that she couldn't necessarily divulge from her public persona, but I could use it to inform the reader that, you know, basically spies live this life of a lie, and it's very difficult, and it's not as exciting as like a James Bond film, but it's just as dangerous, you know, and that was a big part of it too, is kind of debunking the myths that movies portray in terms of government cover-ups and spies like James Bond, like, you know, or TV shows like Alias, like they always portray spies as these incredibly attractive, fit individuals who know mixed martial arts and drive fast cars and jump out of helicopters. But honestly, if that happens to a spy, if they get into a fight or have to jump off a building or run from a fireball, then they've totally screwed up their mission and are probably going to get fired and probably at the very least captured. Because, you know, spies just want to blend in. They just want to disappear.
Exactly. No, they do for sure. So how much fact checking, once you did all the research, the great fact checkers, editors, that was probably an interesting process, because I know this for writing for as the sports category director for Podcast Magazine. When I do my interviews, like with you, I'll go back and I have to send it to my editor. And then the fact checking starts.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy. But I couldn't imagine a book, especially this book.
Yeah, well, it's a process I'm pretty used to with them because they have a really good fact-checking department, and most of my books are nonfiction, so they're all fact-checked.
So you've written, how many books have you written with National Geographic?
Oh gosh, probably about 25 at this point.
25.
Yeah, I've been writing for them since 2008, so they keep me pretty busy, which is great. You know what I'm talking about. You get it back with all of these notes in the margins, queries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole thing where you have to view it on a certain thing and say, asking these questions and you have to go back. Oh, I understand exactly.
Yeah. And they contact the people that I talk to just to verify everything. And, but it's pretty, I mean, it's it's not a fun process, but it's a necessary process. And it's ultimately, it makes everything better and it's not that stressful. I mean, it just keeps me on my toes.
Yeah. And as a writer, what would you rate your writing? I mean, because you're creative, you're a good researcher. But for people out there that might not be the greatest writer, but yet are very creative and can create a good story and can do a book like this, do you discourage them or do you say hire a good editor if they want to be where you end up today?
Definitely get a good editor, get someone who's honest that you need. That's, you know, as you know, as a sports writer, you need another pair of eyes to look over things.
Heck never thought I'd call myself a writer, Crispin. I am a communicator. I'm a talker. That's why I love Clubhouse.
Communicator.
Because I go on Clubhouse and I'm a journalist in that way with my voice. And hopefully everything turns to voice someday. Then I'll be a good shape, right? No more writing words. All you do is talk it out. That would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Then I'll be out of work.
No. I think you'd be a good talker. But that's, you know, with the whole social voice.
Yeah.
Because I think writer is the most powerful thing in the world. And many people in schools, because I'm a former teacher, I'm kind of just bringing this story and you're like, wow, we've gone full circle in this interview, but I love it. Because if I was on the radio, I'd be like, okay, quickly, but I see that person that I'm looking over in the other screen and your motivation and everything telling writers, you know, that process of really not becoming who you are. How they become good. You said a good editor, but what other strategy you think would be good for them?
Well, reading a lot, because a good writer reads a lot. You get a lot of insight.
Really? Okay.
I would say that's the number one. And actually, you know, when I'm not writing, I'm reading, and I try and always be reading. It just keeps, you know, fresh ideas in your mind. Really just being concise, that's the biggest trick, especially when you're writing for a younger audience, because kids have, you know, they've got all these things competing for their attention, video games, movies, TV. So a book, getting them to sit down and read a book's kind of a big ask right now. So
right. So it's almost like bite size compared to the other writers of other books where it's very detailed. You have to get to the point quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And just using a lot of examples that are relatable to the reader. I mean, on top of writing nonfiction for National Geographic, they've started writing fiction books, and I'm writing a series for them called Zeus the Mighty that kind of teaches Greek mythology through a fictitious tale of a little hamster who thinks he's Zeus, the king of the gods. So this is, for me, a new type of writing, going from nonfiction, transitioning to fiction. And in some ways it's easier because I'm making it up. I'm pretty much making it all up in my head. I don't have to do a lot of research other than know the basics of Greek mythology. So in that sense, it's easier. But in the other sense, it's more difficult because I have to paint a picture of the action of the scenes. I have to write dialogue. So it's a totally different animal. And I guess if someone's considering being a writer, they should decide, what do they like more? Do they like taking information, synthesizing it, and then putting it into a real easy to digest nugget? Because it's like kind of like telepathy. You're like transmitting your thoughts to the reader in a very clear and concise and hopefully colorful way. Or go into fiction, where it's just, you have carte blanche. You can write whatever you want, create whatever scenarios you want. But at the same time, the story has to be like tight and concise. And that's where an editor comes in, where an editor will be like, this whole sequence is garbage.
And how do they come up with that? Editors are not good. They're good writers. They're great writers, but they're not creative writers. What would you define the best editors?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You think about that. I think I can write well. I can write quickly. I can write a lot of concise stuff. The good tip you just brought up, read more. And now I'll have more time to read, and I'm just going to read stuff in my craft, because I try to become this insider in every area of my full 360 marketing business. So I understand from social media what's new with Instagram, all those different things. And then now I need to write them, I need to talk them, and I need to have the right team in place that can edit them. Because if you told them, go write an article on Instagram, if they're an editor, that's not their skill set. So you're looking at hiring an editor spends time seeing those missing words, seeing that there's no detail, questioning what you're writing. Is that right? What an editor does, a good editor?
Yeah. And an editor will be specialized. So, you know, I work with editors in children's fiction. So this editor my editor knows how much exposition can capture before you start boring the audience. But her my editor's best advice to me is always show, don't tell. Like, don't have the scenes play out in, and you don't necessarily have to have one character explaining what's happening, but have the scenes play out. And also, an editor of say fiction will understand the different principles of story structure. Like, you know, it's like with a film has three acts where they should all be paced a certain way. And a good editor understands that too, and studies that and knows it better than I do and can help. You know, my editor works with me from out from the outline of the story through, I'd say, five revisions. Wow. Okay. So it takes, it's a lot of back and forth. And just, you know, as a writer, I got to have a thick skin, and because I know that what she's telling me is
going to be. Oh, that's why I don't like writing. I don't want to have a thick skin. Then don't tell me why I didn't interview you well and say, Neil, you didn't, but I wanted to tell a story. And this is where we could kind of break these into different podcasts. What's happening now because of my role. And now I'm living on Clubhouse as a podcast expert. I'm more and more seeing, wow, there was a lot of content I could use in these interviews that might not be about promoting it, that you've given us nuggets in writing. You should think about a writing podcast, especially for children's writers. That would be huge for you and what you're doing. All right. Where can we purchase the book Top Secret? So I gave you a top secret secret in my always giving dropping gems. If you've not been on Clubhouse yet, you got to go on Clubhouse. I'm dropping gems right now, telling our listeners out there the importance, and viewers, the importance of writing. But for you to purchase your book, especially, you know, all these parents out there say, I need to get a book right now for great summer reading. I can't believe we're talking summer reading. And if you're, and hopefully every school in the country has this when they go back to the library, but where can we get the book?
Well, you can find it on Amazon. You can also go to natgeokids.com. Yeah, it should be at local bookstores too. If you can support your local bookstore, that's always great. But yeah, if you just wanted to show up at your door, you just go on Amazon.
Hey, I love it. And I'm so glad we got to connect face to face. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about you. And everyone needs to check you out for sure. And are you on social media yourself? Because again, you've written so many books. Are you on social that people could check you out? Are you on social, Chris, that people can check you out?
No, not really. If you go to just natgeokids.com, that's pretty much where my stuff lives.
I see. So you're living on that as the kids writer, but you've for Nat Geo, but other things I understand. But I appreciate stopping by, Crispin. Great information. Get Top Secret today. Check it out. And best of luck to you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I had a blast chatting.
You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.